I have a heaping helping of football and the Oscars and weirdly no NBA, but it's all coming up next. It's the Bill Simmons podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Nissan SUV. It's good to stay up to date. I mean, we've seen this in basketball. We've seen it in football. We've seen it in baseball. Once the stats started taking off in the 2000s, everybody had to figure that out. Then I remember in basketball, first it was three-pointers. Then it was defensive stats. You just got to keep moving. You got to keep evolving. You got to keep going. Now it's pace and threes. What's it going to be next, big guys? That's why the 2024 Nissan Rogue has Google built right into its 12.3-inch touchscreen infotainment system. With Google Maps, Assistant, and more, you can stay up to date on everything that's ahead without even needing to connect your phone. Find your next adventure with the Nissan SUV. Learn more about the Rogue, Pathfinder, and Armada SUVs at NissanUSA.com. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. If you missed it, we did The Purge on the Rewatchables on Monday night, one of the more fun ones we've done in a while. Go check that one out. Coming up on this podcast, going to be talking Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Daniel Jones, quarterbacks, all the way around with Shiel Kapadia and John Jastrzemski from The Ringer. And then Sean Fennessy is coming on to do a deep dive on the Oscars. All the storylines we need to know about. Some bets we might want to make. Are there going to be surprises? So that is the second half of this podcast. I am not doing NBA. The discourse with the MVP this week really bummed me out. I don't know what to say anymore. I've probably written more words about the MVP than anyone ever. I've probably talked on podcasts about the MVP more than anyone ever. I've had one since 2007. I wrote a chapter in my book correcting every single MVP injustice through 2010. So it's not like I don't care about this award because I do, but there's a month to go in the season and we have three transcendent guys, Embiid, Giannis, and Joker. It's still wide open. Somebody's going to start to pull away a tiny bit from the other two and it'll become pretty obvious who to vote for. And if it doesn't, that's why we have all these voters. And everyone will vote and somebody will get slightly more votes than somebody else and they'll be the MVP and it'll be fine and we'll all live. But this stuff's supposed to be fun. And this week was not fun. It was toxic. It was terrible. I hated it. And this is not why I became a sports fan. So boycotting the NBA today. We will talk about it on Sunday with Rosillo, I am sure. Coming up, football and our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we're taping this part of the podcast. It is almost 2 o'clock Pacific time. We are on Aaron Rodgers' Jets watch. Shiel Kapadia has been covering this whole free agent saga, which is getting really interesting this week. And then John Jastrzemski hosts our New York podcast and is monitoring the Rodgers thing as well because it's just good content for his pod. Shiel, what's a bigger story to you right now, Rodgers or Lamar?
Oh, it's got to be. I think it's Lamar easily because there are like wide ranging implications on how NFL contracts are handed out. There are all these, any team could jump in. Like we could just, you know, wake up to a text that T-Max is, you know, is meeting with Lamar Jackson on Wednesday. So the Rodgers thing to me at least feels like it's going to happen. We just don't know the exact terms. But at this point, I don't know how you guys feel. I just think it'd be a surprise if he's not starting for the Jets in week one of next season.
JJ, panic move or smart move for the Jets?
I think it's somewhere in between because there are a lot of warning signs. Aaron Rodgers' age, Aaron Rodgers' performance last year, that would have you cautious. But I kind of think, guys, the Jets are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They have to go and get Aaron Rodgers. They whiffed on Zach Wilson. This coach has to get to the playoffs or he's going to get fired. If the Jets don't get to the playoffs, even Joe Douglas, with the job he's done in the draft, with guys like Gardner and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, he's going to be feeling the heat if they're 7-10 or they're 8-9 next season. So I didn't look at Derek Carr as this move the needle move. I have Jet fans in my life who are like, oh, you gotta sign Carr. You can't let Carr leave the building. Based upon what? Carr stunk last year. Like, what was I missing with that? I watched him on Christmas Eve basically whiff and throw incompletion after incompletion against the Steelers. Rodgers, you got to roll the dice. I understand it could blow up in their face. I know it could look awful in 2 or 3 years, and it would be typical Jets. You got to do it. Whatever it takes, because if you put Rodgers on the Jets and he plays the way he did 2 years ago, you could sell me that they're a legit contender in the AFC.
I couldn't agree more on Carr, and I've been saying that on the podcast. To me, he looked washed last year. He looked like a guy who didn't want to get hit anymore. I was shocked by the Saints signing. I really thought that was just ludicrous, especially for a team that's in so much cap hell anyway. My take on the Rodgers thing, I have two to throw you guys, and they're tied together. One is that I think the Jets have had so much damage with all the quarterback situations they've had. Really, their whole history dating back to Joe Willie wins in the Super Bowl over 50 years ago. And then from that moment on, it's just they're trying to patch that position together. Through every Jets fan I have, through the 80s, through the 90s, they're getting like, you know, the Bubby Bristers and the Neil O'Donnells and their Boomer Esiason and Brett Favre they go and get. And then they're spending these high draft picks on people like Sanchez and Zach Wilson, and they could just never get it right. And I see the philosophy of, all right, we have this loaded team that from a win-loss record completely underachieved last year because of the quarterback position. How do we not get Aaron Rodgers? What? We'll finally have stability. But Sheila, I think JJ hit the key point. What Rodgers are you getting? You're getting this guy who has acted really erratically on and off the field the last couple of years. And I didn't think he played well last year. He was above average, but I don't think he was elite. I don't think he was awesome. And to me, he seems like an arrow pointing down guy. Do you think it was just the circumstances, or do you think age, or do you think there's a comeback in him?
Yeah, I think Tom Brady ruined sort of what we think about these aging curves. I mean, Rodgers turns 40 during next season, 40 years old. And now you're asking him to compete with the Joe Burrows, Josh Allens, Patrick Mahomes of the AFC. I mean, it's tough. Like JJ said, it's almost like, what's the ceiling there? I don't see the ceiling of them as a contender. But at the same time, it goes back to the history, Bill, you just mentioned. Like, if they make the playoffs, Jets fans are going to be thrilled next year. If they make the divisional round, Jets fans are going to be thrilled. So if you're asking me what's the best long-term move for the franchise and like the smart, reasonable football nerd thing to do, it's not to give up draft picks for the right to pay a 39-year-old quarterback $59 million next year with Nathaniel Hackett. That wouldn't be it. But at the same time, if you're a Jets fan and you're like, God, it sucks. Our team was good last year. Our quarterback held us back. We just want to have like a game on, you know, December 29th where we're like, hey, we have a chance to make the playoffs, or maybe we're going to make the wild card. Then you can sell me on that. But yeah, it could be a situation. Remember when Antonio Brown went to the Raiders? And we're like, wow, Mike Tomlin must have been just like the greatest coach of all time, because we didn't know anything that was happening with Antonio Brown. Like, there could be a little bit of that situation where you're like, all right, putting Rodgers in a different place in New York with that media market, what's it going to be like? So either way, it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be good for JJ and the New York pod once it happens.
Yeah, JJ, I look at it. I always trust my gut with this. My gut is like, this is a mistake. But at the same time, as Sheil points out, like, if it does happen, and it seems like it's going to happen, it is one of those I can quickly talk myself into this things, especially if you're a Jets fan. You're like, oh my God, I just had to watch Zach Wilson. I had to watch Mike White with broken ribs going out there getting the shit kicked out of him. Who is that other guy? The only guy, all he could do was run?
Strevler.
I had to watch that guy.
And he looked like, better than Zach Wilson for what it was worth.
And you could talk yourself into this whole Aaron Rodgers, he just got burned out in Green Bay. The moment they drafted Jordan Love we can rejuvenate him. How many Jets fans in your life will talk themselves into Rodgers immediately?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah, I think there was a divide amongst Jet fans regarding Rodgers and Carr. For some reason, there was a camp of Jet fans who wanted Derek Carr to be the quarterback because
that's
he was
insane.
Younger.
I just don't understand that.
I'm right there with you. To me,
did they not
no
have league pass? Or is it fans that didn't have league pass last season?
Well, I guess they're prisoners of what they saw 2 years ago with Pit Boss as the coach and the Raiders getting to the playoffs and not the Derek Carr they saw last year. And maybe they were just talking themselves into the age. But I think Bill Shill, all Jet fans I know are basically like, let's do this, because if they don't get Aaron Rodgers, then what? Jimmy Garoppolo? Baker Mayfield? I don't think Jet fans want to go and draft another quarterback. And I get it. Listen, plenty of teams have whiffed on quarterbacks. That's true. But they're going to have Zach Wilson PTSD. They're going to have Sam Darnold PTSD. They're going to have Mark Sanchez PTSD. Like, the Jets, I think where they're at, the fan base does not want them to go and be in the market. Hey, we're drafting another quarterback. Let's see how he plays in his rookie year. And in their defense, listen, they haven't been in the playoffs in over a decade. That is an eternity in the NFL. They're basically like, screw it. We got talent. We got a defense. Get a veteran quarterback. And oh, by the way, the veteran quarterback, as mediocre for his standard as he was last year, 2 years ago, he was the MVP. Was he not?
Well, the problem for me is I really like this Jets team. I don't know about the coach, but I thought nucleus talent-wise, I was really impressed by them. And before Breece Hall went out, that definitely was a sliding doors moment for them. If he doesn't get hurt, they might be able to sneak in anyway with as bad as their quarterbacks were. So you look at it on the one hand, you think, wow, if Rodgers can be somewhere between 2 years ago and last year, this team could be awesome. I guess my question is, I'm making this trade to win the Super Bowl if I'm doing this. And does this either guarantee or come close to guaranteeing me doing it? It's a little like the Durant thing. When the Suns gave up all that stuff for Durant, I thought they gave up too much, but I'm also okay with it because you've talked me into, like, you can win the title with this trades, which is should be the goal. When Minnesota did that for Gobert, that was different. It's like, I don't even know what you guys are with this trade. You give up all that stuff. I don't even know if you're a second round team. So with Rodgers, I guess my question is, if they didn't do this, and JJ's like, well, what do? You get a stopgap guy, a mediocre guy, a middle of the road guy? But if you put like a C+ or B- quarterback on this team, right? Like Minnesota, Kirk Cousins has 1 year left on his deal. Wait, are they excited about keeping him? I have no idea. But what if they just traded for Kirk Cousins for a year? What if they just signed Jacoby Brissett? And they're like, you know what? We watched those Browns games. You're pretty solid. You weren't great. You weren't bad. Maybe that's all we need. And then we get somebody much cheaper. And then we could put all the money somewhere else and try to get the totality of a football team. I would rather do that if I was a Jets fan. What would you do? Would you go the Rodgers path or the totality path?
Yeah, I mean, from a team building perspective, it's the latter. Like you said, if you put Jimmy Garoppolo and let's say you bring back Mike White, I don't know, you're probably not that excited about it, but that's
like
half
Mike White.
The salary.
Jeff Van likes so got, Mike White too. They like Mike White a lot more than they like Zach Wilson.
Right.
There you go. So you got Garoppolo, who his teammates are going to love him. He's going to have a nice supporting cast there with Garrett Wilson in the offensive line. If he gets injured, he's had durability issues. You have Mike White. So you get that at half the price, probably, of what you're going to have to pay Aaron Rodgers. Plus, you keep whatever draft capital.
I would say that
Bill just mentioned.
I think that's 1/3 of the price. I don't think that's half the price.
It could be. Yeah, yeah. Garoppolo is really tough to predict. I mean, you're right. It could be, you know, he could make $14 million a year next year, and it could be 1/3 of the price. And then you have the draft capital where either you can use that or you can trade for some veterans and you can make the playoffs. Like, I disagree that you make this move to get to the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, it would have to be like the 100th percentile outcome, in my opinion, for them to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC with all those other teams and Aaron Rodgers at 39 years old. To me, this is like a really ownership driven. I mean, if you read between the lines, everything with the Jets since last season, like, they were embarrassed at how that season played out. So you have like all the makings. You have a coach and a GM who might feel like they're coaching for their jobs. You have an owner in Woody Johnson getting back in it, who wants his team to be relevant, who wants to make the splash, who wants to make the playoffs. Like, I feel like they're going to make this move just to be relevant and get into the playoffs next year. If you're making this move and you feel like you're going to get to the Super Bowl, I mean, in my opinion, you're really mistaken.
JJ, Kyle, turn the TikTok camera on. Let's go worst case scenarios for this trade for the Jets. a very easy franchise to go worst case scenario with, right? So are we sure Robert Saleh is a good coach? Let's start there.
No.
So you're moving in on this and it's like, this is the final piece. From what I saw last year, that team was all over the place from a coaching standpoint. Like borderline wasn't sure if he was going to come back. We've seen Rodgers, not exactly like the easiest guy to coach over the years, I would say. Not prone to throwing some passive aggressive barbs out there. And now you're going to have him on Pat McAfee and in New York City in the fucking Matrix versus like in the middle of nowhere in Green Bay, 3 hours from Milwaukee. My shit detector's going off, JJ. What? Give me some worst case scenarios for you.
I think worst case scenario, it has like a Kyrie Irving vibe to it.
Ooh.
Not to the extreme of what Kyrie did in Brooklyn, because listen, nobody cares about the Nets. And there's a lot more attention on the Jets than there are the Brooklyn Nets. But they do have some weird vibes that they give off. There's no doubt about that. And Kyrie obviously takes it to another level. That's worst case scenario to me. That Rodgers is a quarterback that's going to be 40 years old. His best days maybe are behind him. The attention is too much. The weight
doesn't
of
click
the
with
franchise.
Salah.
Well, that's it. I see. I don't worry as much about Salah because Salah's too nice. That's what I've heard. The biggest complaint about Robert Saleh is that he's too freaking nice. That he's trying to be everybody's buddy over there. He's a likable guy. He's a very charismatic guy, but he's just flat out too nice. So I think he will try to do everything to appease Aaron Rodgers, like by all means necessary. Can he coach winning football? Well, he put a pretty good defense together last year. I'm going to give him credit for that. I mean, the Jets 2 years ago were basically at the bottom of every statistical category. And last year, they were basically a top 10 defense. So if I'm going to be fair to Robert Saleh, I'll give him that. Time management, I don't know. Leadership, I think he's good with the players. But in game, does he leave a lot to be desired? Did that Detroit game cost them dearly when he had no idea how to manage the clock and use timeouts? Yeah, so I think from Rodgers' standpoint, the worst case scenario here, despite the diva that he presents at times, it's his play. Because you know
at
what?
Times.
Well, listen, my point is you'll deal with him being a diva if he's throwing for 35 touchdowns and he's playing great. If he's playing, you know, at an average level, then it's a lot more problematic, no doubt.
All right, follow-up question, JJ. Does he feel like New York's kind of guy? Just the city?
No. Not
that's
at all.
Which is a different argument, but it like, look, man, I know New York is my natural arch rival, and I've certainly argued with my share of New Yorkers over the years for millions of hours. I do kind of respect what they like and don't like, and Rodgers to me does not seem like a New York guy. I just don't see it. It doesn't fit in with the vibe. He doesn't fit in with the kind of guys who have succeeded in the city over the years, and it would be, I don't want to say it would be an anomaly, but it would be a little different. I don't even know what the parallels would be.
It's definitely off the beaten path. I'm trying to think of one where a guy just didn't seem like a New York guy and
super
came in
quirky
and had
usually
success.
Doesn't work in New York.
See, I think you can be quirky, but you have to embrace the quirkiness. You cannot be defiant about the quirkiness. You know what I'm saying? Like if you embrace it and you roll with it, I think New Yorkers will respect that. The one thing with Rodgers, though, it's not like he's going to be living in the West Village. It's not like he's going to be walking around New York City and you're just dealing with all sorts of distractions. The Jets play in Florham Park, New Jersey. He can go and get his big mansion 10 minutes away from the practice facility and basically be in his little, cabana or whatever he's going to set up, Chester or Livingston, wherever he wants to live. So he can avoid that. But to your point, that's why I was always skeptical of Aaron Rodgers wanting the Jets. You know, that was always something to me that kind of came to the forefront. I was like, Aaron Rodgers wants to live in New York? Aaron Rodgers wants the attention that comes with being a New York athlete?
It seemed like he had no other options. Sheil, you hate New York about as much as anybody. What's your take on Rodgers in New York?
I enjoy New York. Take the train up from Philly. I feel like, JJ, your read is wrong. Aaron Rodgers is going to sit at home in a mansion in suburban New Jersey and not want the attention? Have you watched how this guy has operated over the last 2 years? He literally does a podcast that makes news during the season every single week coming out saying something. I mean, he has been very available.
So, Sheila, you think he's going to be Fifth Avenue Aaron? You think Aaron's going to get the spot in the city in Soho?
Listen, I don't know where he's going to live because you're right. I've been to the practice facility and that's probably not an easy commute. But when he has some downtime on a Friday afternoon or a Saturday, absolutely. I think that might be part of what he finds appealing about this, honestly, is the attention aspect. What we've learned the last few years, Aaron Rodgers has a lot of takes about a lot of things that no one knew existed during like the first, whatever, 12 years of his career. And he wants to share them with the world. So I think it's going to be entertaining. I don't think he's just going to be, you know, have his nose in his playbook in suburban New Jersey, show up at the games, show up at the practice facility. I think he would embrace the entire New York City experience. And for anyone who does football related content like myself, that's going to be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think this is the number one story next year if he goes to the Jets from a curiosity standpoint, because we've lost Brady. We might have literally lost Brady. He might move to Mars. I don't know where with the
he's adopting direction. Cats these days. That's the direction Tom Brady's going in. It's all about cats.
The direction his offseason is going are prepared for anything. But if you just talk about like the best stories of next season, this would be the most fascinating to watch unfold. Him in New York, him on a new team. The upside potentially of him and also the downside and whether last year was just an aberration or that's the quarterback he's becoming. And in general, like Shiel made the key point, Brady and his success in those first two Buck seasons completely skewed whatever we thought was possible. And there's a chance Brady's just like LeBron, where it's just like, you can't compare him to other players, you know, because before Brady, nobody had done this at that age. Every single quarterback had tailed off and didn't want to get hit anymore and physically broke down. And it just wasn't realistic. This might say more about me than anything, but I've always liked Jimmy G. And I really love the thought of him in New York City just for a variety of reasons. He was just competent enough to solve the Jets' competent QB thing. But also, like, I just think he would have been a great New York guy. He would have been out. There would have been girls. There would have been things happening. There would have been stories. JJ, don't you feel like Jimmy G is just, he needs at least to do a lap in New York for a season?
Broadway Jimmy? I mean, I could see it. Yeah. Courtside at the Knicks game. Courtside at Knicks Celtics totally. Second round. He's got a couple of babes around him. He's got the
SNL cameo. Like just all that stuff.
I can see it. Listen, when I was going through like the possibilities for quarterback with the New York Jets, I took a lot of shit from some Jet fans in my life when I said, yeah, I'd prefer Jimmy G for you guys as opposed to Derek Carr. They're like, oh, well, Jimmy G doesn't play.
Me too.
That's the big knock on him as a player. Durability, right? Because he missed time last year. He missed time the year before that. It seems like it's a common theme throughout his career. He's a solid quarterback. Now, I to Shiel's point, the AFC is so loaded. I think Jimmy Garoppolo comes to the Jets. They're a playoff team. Like, you could sell me on the Jets going and winning 10 games next year. But if I'm going to fantasize about the Jets winning multiple playoff games, I don't see Jimmy Garoppolo being that guy. And I can see Aaron Rodgers, if he's right, being that guy.
Sheila, is the Jimmy G, oh, all he does is get hurt, everything. Is that fair? Or could we say that he had bad luck with the injuries?
I mean, I think the durability thing is fair. It's happened, you know, often enough. I honestly would put him and Carr kind of in that same category as middle tier quarterback, where if the circumstances around them are good, that they can perform. If they're not around them, they're not going to carry you. If they're pressured a little bit, it can get really ugly. I mean, what would be funny about the Garoppolo thing is like the Jets teammates, how much they would embrace him after that. I mean, they were not shy about voicing their displeasure with Zach Wilson. Like the one thing every time, every year with Garoppolo is like teammates love him. He doesn't make it about him. So that would be an interesting path that he took. And then the last thing, just to, you know, on Rodgers, I will say this, even last year, the Packers, by the time the end of the year rolled around and it wasn't every game, like they ranked 11th in offensive DVOA efficiency by the time the end of the year rolled around. So I feel like I've been pretty negative about this possibility for the entire segment. But if you're a Jets fan, I mean, you can point to that and say, hey, our receivers are going to be better than what he had last year. We've seen quarterbacks at this stage in their career Brady, Manning, the all-time greats, go to the new home and have a lot of success, even if it is just for 1 year. So I think you can talk yourself into some of that stuff. So again, it is high variance. Like, there's a scenario where he delivers Jets fans their most fun year of the last like 25 years. Maybe they lose in the divisional round, but every week for those 3 hours, they're like, man, we were watching Zach Wilson last year and we're watching Aaron Rodgers make these high degree of difficulty throws, and Garrett Wilson has like 1,400 yards receiving. So there is that possibility. I wouldn't put my money on that being the outcome, but that is within the range of like possible outcomes for the Jets if they do land Rodgers.
Big winner is Garrett Wilson. He's got to be just checking his phone. He's just like, did it happen yet? Is it, please? Any chance? You know, I want to take a break, but before we do that, just wanted to mention, I think Green Bay has handled this spectacularly bad for a couple years now. I don't understand why they gave him the extension last year. There seems to just be a big disconnect leading back with the Jordan Love pick and all the way through. And it's interesting to me that they're the only team without an owner and this has been handled badly. And even like, you know, letting the Jets basically negotiate with Rodgers, but unless it hasn't come out yet that they've already agreed to terms, like if I'm the Jets and Rodgers is like, okay, cool, let's do it. Why am I giving up a first round pick for him at that point? Who am I competing against? There's no, how many other teams could even add his salary into their salary cap? It's like, hey, like people are like, oh, he might go to Vegas. And then as like Vegas, they're decimated. They're not going to be able to fit him in a salary cap. So if I'm the Jets, I've seen the stuff where it's like, what'll be a first rounder and something else? And I'm just dubious. Sheila, what have you heard about what the actual price is?
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's probably going to be a first rounder and something else.
Man,
I don't think it's going to be multiple
agree with that.
First rounds. It's just because the price of quarterbacks, I mean, look at what Russell Wilson got last year. Look at what Carson Wentz got. It's kind of just the way the quarterback market is. And the other thing, Rodgers doesn't have like a no trade clause. He can threaten to retire if you trade him to a team that he doesn't want to go to. But I think you're right about the Packers. I mean, Rodgers took them to the cleaners from a financial perspective. I mean,
what
they
was the purpose of that?
Yeah, I mean, he just, you know, once he wins the MVP, they thought they were going to move on, and now you can't move on, and now you have to give the financial apology. So, yeah, I think they're probably just want this to be over with, get some draft compensation, see what Jordan Love does. But from the day they picked Jordan Love, traded up to get Jordan Love to now, yeah, they got a couple MVPs from their quarterback, but kind of where it's going to leave them is not in a great place.
Yeah, JJ, I just look back at that a year ago, and you had a chance to get out. And if you're going all in with that contract, then that's it. He's retiring as a Packer. So how do you get here later? It's not like there are teams, like there are bad owners in this league. Let's be like the Browns owner is probably the biggest clown of all the owners right now. But there's 3, 4, 5 really bad owners in the league. Snyder is the most reprehensible. But I just don't understand how you don't have this shit all figured out when you're giving him that contract. That contract is like, even if they trade him, it's, what is it, like a $35, $40 million cap hit just to get rid of him at this point? It just seems like you're mutilating your own team. I didn't get it.
Well, and think about it. This is the same franchise that had an opportunity maybe to get over the top. They didn't need to make that Jordan Love pick that was full of how many good playmakers, T. Higgins, the list goes on and on, that they could have added when they fell short against Tampa, when they fell short against San Francisco 2 years ago. And then they say, all right, well, Rodgers is the MVP. We got to keep him. Denver wants him. We can't let him go to Denver. All right, he's going to retire a Packer. And now because the end of the year played out poorly, you got this terrible cap hit. And now you're kind of in no man's land where it's like, look, we drafted Jordan Love. We're not heading in the right direction. We want to see what we have before we make a decision on him. That's why you think about that pick. What an absolute disaster it was making that pick. And who knows? Maybe Jordan Love ends up being a great player, but they missed out on the most valuable time to play a young quarterback. It's when they're making no money and you could load up your salary cap with all sorts of needs that you could surround your quarterback, playmakers, defensive players, you name it. Jordan Love's good. Hey, guess what? You got to go pay him in a year or two. That's a dirty little secret.
Well, and Sheila, the key point there is like they could have had that Denver trade and they could have all the stuff that happened in Seattle last year just could have been Denver if they had just said, fuck it. All right, we're out of the Rodgers business. you take basically that same version of the Wilson trade and you're off and going. I want to take a quick break, and we have to hit this Lamar thing because Shiel, JJ's favorite team might be involved. I think if Lamar's on the move, you're shaking your head. All right, we're going to take a break. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Take a minute to check your social battery. How you doing? Does the thought of social events make you feel excited or exhausted? Are you like me where you're looking at April and you're just thinking, man, there's a lot of sports. There's a lot of podcast content. There's a lot of stuff to watch. I got to make sure I don't lose control of the narrative here. Got to spend time with the family. Got to unwind. Got to spend time with my friends. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up heading into the summer. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time, but therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. And when you're feeling worn out from socializing, therapy can give you the help for the tools you need to take care of yourself and recharge, because a full battery is the key to a full life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BillSimmons today to get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/BillSimmons. This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Whenever someone mentions spring, you can't help but think of the word fresh. Spring brings fresh air, fresh beginnings, freshly cleaned homes. It's also a really great time to take a fresh look at SimpliSafe home security. I use it in my home and absolutely love it. By the way, summer's coming. No better time to maybe dip in to our friends at SimpliSafe than when you're leaving your house, your condo, your apartment, wherever you live. You're probably going to go somewhere for a while. Maybe it's a week. Maybe it's 2 weeks. Guess who's going to know that? Burglars. SimpliSafe, great because it protects your whole home. Uses advanced sensors and a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. Keep watch over your property day and night. 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. You can even check it out on your phone. Gives you peace of mind. You want peace of mind? Try SimpliSafe today. Risk-free. No contract. 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off your system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/BS. That's simplisafe.com with two I's, simplisafe.com/BS. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. All right, so they do the non-exclusive franchise tag for Lamar Jackson, which in my opinion is the we're open for business franchise tag, right? If you just put the franchise tag on him, cool. You're staying here. It'll be on this salary, you'll do the holdout, and we'll have to argue about it. The non-exclusive is like, we've just put you on eBay. We're just going to see, but we put a bid on it where it's like, it has to be, you have to bid at least this, or we get to withdraw, you know, and then you're not on eBay anymore. I forget what that's called. Maximum bid, whatever. Them doing that makes me think he's not going to be on the team next year. So what if you had to say on the Ravens, off the Ravens, what would your pick be?
I would lean off the Ravens for the reasons you just said. I mean, you make this move and you're saying, all right, you think you're worth a certain number. Go ahead. Any team, you can sign a contract with any team and then we'll get the right to match it or not. Now, maybe that's just the Ravens saying, listen, we've been 2 years at this and we want to, in good faith, allow you to have this opportunity. And if you get it, we'll match it. We want you to be our quarterback. But this isn't like Madden. Like, there are relationships, there are feelings involved. I mean, if you're Lamar Jackson and you're saying, all right, this is the route you're going, and now I have to explore my market and go that way. So it's tough. I'm not like all in that there's no way he can play for the Ravens again. Because if you've noticed, they've tried to massage this publicly with John Harbaugh's comments and their GM, Eric DaCosta, his comments publicly, like, no, Lamar's still our guy. It's a tough negotiation. It takes two to tango, all that stuff. But I just feel like when it gets to this point, assuming, by the way, that we find a team that's going to jump in and say, hey, we want to sign you to the contract you think you deserve, which we don't know that for a fact yet. But assuming that happens, we'll see if the Ravens say, all right, we'll go ahead and match, or if they say, you know what, this has gotten to a bad point, we will take our draft picks, we will move in a different direction. But the fact that it got to this point, I'm leaning a little bit more towards he's not going to be on the Ravens next year.
Me too. JJ, you wouldn't give up two first round picks for him?
I don't think the Dolphins financially, number one, can make it work. Number two, they don't have a first round pick this year because it got taken away in the whole tampering situation with Tom Brady. So the Dolphins don't have.
So you'd have to wait till they'd have to wait till after the draft and then do it, and it would be the next.
And then the other
picks.
And then the other wrinkle you got to throw in here: Baltimore and Miami are in the AFC. Don't you get the sense Baltimore would prefer? Now they may not have the option. They either have to, of course, decide to match, or you know he ends up going elsewhere. Don't you get the sense that they, if they end up moving Lamar Jackson, their preference would be, okay, let's get him out of the conference. Let's see him in. I know Atlanta said they're out. Carolina, whatever the case may be. I think Lamar would love to go to Miami because he's a Florida guy. Remember, he's a Hollywood Florida guy. He's posted pictures on Twitter and Instagram and him in a Miami Dolphins jersey to troll people from time to time. I don't think Lamar would have a problem going to South Florida. I just don't know from a financial standpoint, from a pick standpoint, it seems, at least for now, Bill, a little clunky.
So Carolina would be another one. Carolina basically did what we were saying the Jets were afraid to do last year. They're like, we'll get Mayfield and Sam Darnold's still here and we drafted somebody and maybe we'll get lucky with one of these. And then you see what happens. They had the most talented NFC South team and the quarterback killed their chances. This year, to me, they're a Lamar possibility. Who else is out there, Shield, that you think would say, fuck it? If the price was two first rounders, whatever. And then I'll go into my theory after you answer about why I think he's actually going to leave.
Yeah, I think the two teams that come to mind, by the way, JJ, I was disappointed. I thought you were going to get some tingly feelings about Lamar, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Mike McDaniel drawing up plays for those guys.
It's sad.
If I were a Dolphins fan, I would be pretty excited about that. But I understand what you're saying from that perspective. Atlanta, I mean, how is Atlanta coming out 5 minutes after this and saying they're not interested? Are they just going to kick the can down the road for like 7 years and win seven games every year? I mean, are you serious with the Falcons? Now, listen, maybe they have an idea that they're going to draft a quarterback or they have another big move. But if they go into week one of next year with like Desmond Ridder or Jacoby Brissett, their fan base should be absolutely irate. I mean, they had a formidable offense with Marcus freaking Mariota, and now you can plug Lamar Jackson into that offense. Like JJ said, you're in the NFC. It's winnable. It's gettable. Now is the time to pounce. So that's one. But my favorite landing spot for Lamar Jackson is the Detroit Lions. This is what you have been waiting for.
I like that.
This is what you have been waiting for, Detroit. Jared Goff was very good last year. Lions fans, don't get mad at me. He was very good. It was a function, partially, of what was around him. A great play caller, a very good offensive line. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown. You have Jameson Williams. By the way, the Lions have two first-round picks. The Lions can trade the 18th pick and next year's pick, give those two up. They still have the number 6 overall pick to bring Lamar Jackson into the NFC, into the NFC North that no longer has Aaron Rodgers. They are the team. I do not want to read a tweet that says the Detroit Lions are not interested in Lamar Jackson. I want to get to Wednesday, wake up, pull out my phone and it says the Lions are the first team showing interest in Lamar Jackson. I mean, to me, if I'm a Lions fan, I would be so excited about that possibility. Him and Dan Campbell, that's my favorite landing spot for Lamar.
Shio, that's just great work. The Panthers have the 9th pick in the draft, which might be a little chess piece for them. Here's why I think Lamar's leaving. As you know, I'm a big body language guy. I'm a big read the tea leaves guy. I'm a big something doesn't sniff right guy. Everything that happened the last few weeks with the Ravens, where they didn't know when Lamar was coming back, he wasn't at a couple of the games, in real time as it was happening, all of it seemed fishy to me. It seemed like there was way more there than this guy's hurt. And, you know, even like there was some whispers about, well, he probably could have played if he had a contract. Like, it was kind of floating in the ether, and it made me think, like, that's just the kind of stuff that happens when somebody's about to leave. Like, whoever's fault it was, whatever was really going on, it's just sometimes shit like that happens, you don't come back from it. JJ, on your Dolphins. So you think Tua's going to be the quarterback next year? Like, we really think Tua's going to play 17 games and some playoff games next year?
Hold on a second. You said, is he going to be the quarterback next year or is he going to play 17 games next year? He's not going to play 17 games. I think.
What happens if he gets another concussion? Give me the number for all of us looking at each other and going, this guy shouldn't play football anymore. Because personally, I'm already there. I think he should take a long break before he decides to play again.
Well, I get that, but it's not your decision. It's not my decision. It's not Shield's decision. You know, like, this is a guy who's got a major and I understand the risks. Like, I don't want to be like cruel and I don't want to diminish that in any way, but he's got either a walk year pending or a fifth year option coming. That's one of the big decisions Miami has to make between now and whenever. I think it's like late April, early May, where they got to decide on the fifth year option, because he could be in a situation like Daniel Jones was in last year with the Giants. It's make or break time. It's big money time. I'm going to go and get myself $45 million a year and set my family up for generations upon generations upon generations, which is something I think he's dreamed of, obviously. Who wouldn't if you're a quarterback in the NFL? Or he's getting that fifth-year option and he likes playing football. Here's the one thing with the concussions. Everyone knows the Tua situation because we watched that horrific Thursday night game against Cincinnati. He's getting carted off the field, and he played the week prior when he probably shouldn't have played the second half against the Buffalo Bills. If he had two or three, Kenny Pickett had two concussions last year. You know, nobody talks about that. Kenny Pickett had two concussions last year, but came back, played well, finished up strong down a stretch. It's not nearly
as much. Did he have two concussions in 4 days?
Well, I understand that. And then he had the one where he played the entire second half on Christmas Day where I'm the same jerk. I felt terrible. I'm tweeting Tua stole Christmas. It ruined my holiday.
Nobody knew.
Exactly. He's playing the entire second half concussed. Look, that's a long-winded answer. I have no idea what's going to happen with this concussion stuff. But the fact remains, everything that you've heard from the Dolphins, at least for next year, I think the fifth-year option will be rather telling. Tua's their starting quarterback next year. I think they got to get a better backup. Teddy Bridgewater stinks. He's done at this point in his career. I want Mike White. I want Taylor Heinicke. Give me one of those guys as a Dolphin backup. Heinicke. I like him as a Dolphin backup. He'd be spunky. Okay. He'd be spunky. Solak suggested that to me. I wanted Mike White, to be honest.
Shill, if I gave you 100-1 odds on Tom Brady being the Dolphins quarterback next year, would you take it?
I would take that. I don't mind what he tweeted. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. We know there was.
Hold on. Let me. Would you 25-1?
I mean, it depends, I guess, what I'm putting down. I mean, yeah, if it's like $10, you could probably get me down pretty low here. If you're asking me for my life savings, then it would be a little bit different. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to rule it out until I see what happens on week one of the 2023 season. I mean, we just have to see. We know he's not going to be in the booth this year. We know what happens with these players. All of a sudden, they're spending time with their families and they're like, all right, this is kind of cool, but it might not be. It might not be exactly what I thought I was signing up for. They start seeing players get ready for the season. Their friends are getting ready for the season and things happen. And listen, I'm a very indecisive person. I can't, you ask me, where do you want to go to dinner? I can't even make that decision. Like, somebody else make it for me. So Brady obviously has some indecision about this, which I can relate to. And he might look at it and say, hey, if I'm put in a better situation where my team doesn't have horrible injury luck, yeah, I can play as well as Tua played last year. And let's go ahead and give it one more year. So I'm basically not going to believe it until probably I see him in a Fox booth calling games.
I completely agree. And I also think he, out of anyone we've had recently, he has the potential of week 10, somebody's starting QB went down on a team that had a chance to win the Super Bowl. Uh-oh. What's it? It's like in wrestling. Oh my God, that's Tom Brady's music. My God, here comes Tom Brady. To put a button on the Lamar thing, because we got to talk about Danny Dimes really quick. You know, Lamar got hurt the last 2 years. And after, the quarterbacks who rely on their legs, I just really worry about it. I feel the same thing about Danny Dimes. I don't really totally understand how much is guaranteed in that contract or what the incentives are. But in general, like, you start paying the $35, $40, $45 million for these guys that use their legs, and Shiel, you're going to be in this spot with Hurts next year. It just makes me a little nervous because Michael Vick, there was a moment with him where it just seemed like that guy was going to be the best quarterback of all time. And you put those miles on him, they take some hits, you know, your MCL goes, and then you got to fix that. Then your calf goes, and then you have a shoulder injury. And it would worry me to pay for the picks and the big contract for Lamar. With that said, I love Shield's idea, because if anyone could turn it around, it's the Detroit Lions, who've had great karma over the last 60 years. They'll be fine. Would you go all in on Lamar, JJ? Just in general, not even for the Dolphins.
I think it depends on the situation. I think a situation like Detroit, where they're so starving for a quarterback, it's an easy sell. I'm with you, though, long term, I am very concerned about the durability and the body type of Lamar Jackson, where it's not that running is a secondary part of his game. It at times can be the most electrifying part of his game. And yeah, history kind of tells us that doesn't necessarily age well. And then you look at the last 2 years, I think there's some pause from the Ravens, for that matter. I mean, this is a guy who won an MVP for them, but the last 2 years when they've needed him the most, he's been unavailable for whatever the reason. So yeah, I'd have pause long term.
Yeah, there's a fearlessness to how he plays when he's really got it going. That is also like the thing that worries me the most. It's like John Morant, like not on-court John Morant, not the off-court stuff that he's having. But some guys are so fearless that you're just like, oh man. I mean, Hurts, just in one season, Shiela, I feel like he took how many like monster hits? And, you know, it certainly didn't bother him in the Super Bowl, except when I don't even remember the play where he just dropped the football and the other team scored a touchdown and the whole momentum of the game changed. But for the most part, you know, physically, I don't know if you can do that for 12 years, what he did this year.
Yeah, I mean, and the body type thing is important. I mean, Hurts is a thicker guy, and he actually does a better job, I think, than most quarterbacks at avoiding those big hits. It's impossible to avoid them completely. My thing with Lamar is, like, all the criticisms are fair. Durability, viability of a guy who runs that much. But I just look at what teams will do to land. Look at what the Cleveland Browns, and you can't talk about Lamar without the Deshaun Watson situation, because that is at the heart
who's the worst
of exactly
Lamar.
What is happening. Who, you know, last year, 24 allegations of mistreatment of women. Remember, he said he's not, Browns are out. And what did the Browns do? They weren't taking no for an answer. We will guarantee the entire contract and give up all this draft compensation. The Denver Broncos with Russell Wilson, the guy's in his 30s. Is he in decline? Desperation with all these teams to land a quarterback. So my thing is like, if you're a team that doesn't have an answer, like you're going to, like we talked about with Rodgers, you're going to have to gamble on upside at some point. And I understand the price is going to be steep with the guaranteed money and the draft picks. But at the same time, you have to look at your options are A, B, and C, which is the option that gives you that upside to compete for a Super Bowl. And I look at Lamar Jackson on a lot of these NFC teams. We just mentioned Detroit, Atlanta, Carolina, whoever else you want to mention. And think about it. He gets traded there. we're doing our pods in August about who's coming out of the NFC. They're in that conversation immediately. And what are your other avenues to get to that point with a guy who's, what, 26 years old? So I think the concerns with Lamar are fair, but at the same time, I think you have to zoom out and look what teams have been willing to do just to land a starting quarterback in recent years to talk about it fairly.
Yeah, JJ, I'm split on this because on the one hand, you know, I want Mahomes or Herbert or Burrow. I my team has Mac Jones. I just feel like I'm, you know, bringing a revolver into a machine gun fight. On the other hand, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. Shields' team just almost won a Super Bowl with a second round pick that nobody even wanted as a starter for the first couple years he was there. Denver won a Super Bowl with broken down Peyton Manning. Baltimore won a Super Bowl with Flacco. Like, this is just in the last 10 years. The thing that worries me, and this goes back to the Giants thing, I was the biggest Danny Dimes fan other than JJ because JJ was doing a pod with him every week. But I really respected what he did last year, and I thought his receivers were awful. And, you know, it was clearly destined to end at some point, like I guess it ended where he just got his ass kicked. But I thought he was really good. I don't like in the NBA or the NFL paying a lot of money for somebody who's not an elite player. You got to point to me the time that it's worked ever in either league, because that's how you end up with where Baltimore ended up with Flacco with that crazy contract when he was making $20 million a year. That's where you get Bradley Beal making $50 million a year for Washington. And, you know, you're going to go 42-40 with him and that's your ceiling. And I look at the Giants and I just wouldn't have done it. If the price was that high, even if it's turns out to be 83, 84 million guaranteed for 2 years is the deal. I just don't think he's worth it. I would rather just try to patch it together over doing that. Where did you stand on the price?
I'm glad, number one, you didn't reference the Allen Houston contract. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they literally had to create the amnesty rule for the Allen Houston contract.
I thought you were going to go down that road. So thank you.
Yeah, I should have.
I had no problem with what the Giants did because you mentioned the situation. You had some of the worst playmakers in the NFL. You have been a hapless, rudderless ship for the last few years. You finally have some stability at quarterback. And what you're betting on here is that Daniel Jones is going to improve upon what he did last year with better talent around him, with one of the most creative and, to me, one of the best offensive minds in football and Brian Daboll coaching him up. And the other thing with this contract, too, if 2 years from now, Daniel Jones ain't it, you're watching the games and he does not ascend the way you want him to ascend, and maybe we look back on the 2022 season as the best year of Daniel Jones' career, you can get out from under that contract. So I'm okay with the Giants going in this direction, because here's my other question, caveat to you, Bill. What are you doing if you're the Giants if you don't bring Daniel Jones back? What's your move?
Well, I guess the question is, for what the price of Lamar is, would it have made more sense to give up first round picks for that possible upgrade?
But the Giants are at? No. They have too much work to do
not,
on the
right?
roster.
Yeah.
No way. No, look, you saw the gap between the Eagles and the Giants in that playoff game. It was eye-opening. I mean, the Eagles, they pounded them.
It was
like
brutal.
The game was over in the first 5 minutes.
Shield watches that on a loop. It just on Friday nights, he just watches that game like 3-4 times
Shield,
in a
I
row.
I promise.
Just...
No, it doesn't bother me. You know where my loyalties lie in the NFL. It doesn't bother me. All good.
Really was great.
I mean, the other option was right there for him, I thought, was just this is why the franchise tag like exists. Now, I know that's going to tie up some of your cap, so maybe you can't bring back Saquon Barkley, but you can bring him back on the tag and say, because what you're saying is reasonable, JJ. Like, you could say, all right, he made improvements last year. That was the best version we saw of Daniel Jones. Maybe he will be better next year. It's not guaranteed. Let's buy a year and see what happens for $32.5 million. So I thought that was just staring them in the face where, yeah, but JJ is right. It's not like an albatross where 3 years from now, we're going to be saying they're stuck with Daniel Jones. It really is about 2 years, $82 million. I would not have done that contract. I would have just said, hey, let's bring him back on the tag. We'll buy a year. We'll see what it looks like next year. And then we can make a decision for him in the long term. Instead, they tied themselves to 2 years at a higher salary than maybe they needed to. But the flip side is it gives them some flexibility to add to the roster with guys like Saquon Barkley.
And then some incentives kick in if he does well. I get it. All right, before we go, Sheila, I got to ask. JJ and I lost our Super Bowl pick. You were the Eagles too, right, JJ?
I did.
And I've been
still
on a Super Bowl streak. JJ was also on a Super Bowl streak. I ended up negative on $1 million picks for the year. And as the weeks pass, so we are now, I don't know, it's like 5 weeks since Super Bowl, 6 weeks since Super Bowl. I feel like the Eagles kind of boned me over. And I feel like they blew the game. And I actually think they might have had a better team. And they left that one on the table. Like, this is how I felt after the Patriots-Giants Super Bowl, the second one, not the first one. I think the Giants legitimately won the first one. The second one, I just looked at that game. I'm like, God damn, we just blew that game. Like, we should have won the Super Bowl.
He sounds like Giselle. He sounds like Giselle.
Even the Eagles, the Nick Foles game, like, we never stopped the Eagles the entire game. It's hard to say, oh, we should have won. It's like, well, they scored literally every time they had the ball. It's hard to say. But that second Giants game, like, we fucking had it. Do you feel that way about the Eagles game, Shu?
Yeah, I think it's funny doing like Philly special. I feel like it's harder to get Eagles fans interested in the offseason, free agency, draft and stuff, because I still think there is kind of that mourning period, just because the years where you have 22 starters healthy in the Super Bowl, I mean, that probably will not happen again in my lifetime. And so you have that by, you know, you mentioned the Jalen Hurts play earlier. Jalen Hurts is other whatever 64 plays. That's as best as he's
right.
ever played. I mean, like on film, incredible as a thrower, put the team absolutely on his back. Defensively, it was an epically horrible performance. And you can look at it and say, oh, but it's Mahomes and Andy Reid. And I've looked at all the numbers and everything. Even for a Mahomes game, that was like in the 92nd percentile of all Mahomes games at all time. I mean, he didn't have to throw into a tight window. He had to make a couple plays, but really it was a lot of the Chiefs coaching staff pantsing the Eagles coaching staff. When you look at those touchdowns with the moat, I mean, you never see guys wide open like that in an NFL game, in a college game, in a high school game. So yeah, and now they've got a bunch of free agents. They're going to have to pay Jalen Hurts a lot of money. So yeah, I think there's a mourning period right now for Eagles fans where they feel like, oh, you know what? Maybe it's the start of something, but also maybe you let a big one slip away.
JJ, they didn't tip a pass.
I know.
Mahomes didn't even need shoulder pads in that game. He just could have worn like a flag football outfit. What the fuck? As the weeks pass, I'm getting madder and madder about it. I feel like that was the right pick. Philly was the right pick in that game.
I mean, that's the way I felt. And if you would have told the two of us, Shiel, that Jalen Hurts would play the way that he played in that Super Bowl, outside of the gift that he gave Kansas City for a touchdown, I would have said, holy smokes, the Eagles are going to win this game by two scores. I'm going to have the feet up. I'm going to be cracking a cocktail. I'm going to be celebrating my Super Bowl streak continuing. That defensive line that was dominant against San Fran and knocked two quarterbacks out of the game that destroyed Daniel Jones, they were not able to get pressure. You mentioned the coaching mismatch in the game, and it was. Andy Reid's staff, I mean, ran circles around Gannon and the Eagles' defensive coaching staff. And yeah, here's the one caveat. You don't know when you're getting back, right? Like, the Eagles, in theory, should be the best team in the NFC next year. They have a lot of talent. They have a lot of returning talent. They have a young, emerging quarterback. They got good weapons, but are they going to have the same luck, the same health? Is it going to go exactly? Tough to get back to that point. You never know.
We had that with the 96 Patriots. They stuck it in the Super Bowl because Denver got upset by Jacksonville. And it was this team that was kind of a year away from being the team, but they're really good, really young. And all of a sudden we're playing the Packers in the Super Bowl and we're going toe to toe with them. And we score and we're down three and Reggie White's like sucking oxygen on the sideline. And then we kick right down the middle of Desmond Howard, who just completely torches us, and the Packers win the Super Bowl. And it fucking hurt. But then after you go, all right, look, we're all set up here. We got a young quarterback. We have all these things. Like, we're good. And then Parcells leaves, and we never got back until all of a sudden, you know, whole new era, Belichick, Brady, the whole thing. It's the crucial point is you just never know. Like, OKC in 2012. Oh, man, we gave Miami a great run. We'll be back. And sometimes you don't come back. So with the Philly thing, man, you think back to last season, the NFC could not have been lined up better. It was a fucking catastrophe, right? You're completely healthy heading into the game. And it's just like, and you lose to this Chiefs team that was playing like 9 rookies, you know? And anyway, sorry to bring that up, Shiel.
Listen, that's okay. We got the Sixers, this version of James Harden. They're going to get out of the second round. I'm feeling good. They're entertaining every night. We got the Phillies starting. They're going to get back. It's a good time. I just want teams to entertain me, and that's what they're doing. Titles
but are James overrated. Harden's back. Also, we have fast baseball games.
I love
this.
This is the single greatest thing that's happened
to me in 2023. Oh, yeah. Baseball's fun again. This is unbelievable.
Baseball's back,
Let's
baby.
Go.
How did this take till 2023? Guy gets the ball back, sets, throws it, gets the ball back, throws it again. It's like, whoa, we did it. JJ, we're going to have baseball could be back.
Are you ready for 27?
I might be doing baseball segments again on the pod. Like, this really could be a resurgence.
Listen, I mean, New York, and Shill knows this in Philly. Listen, we're going to have a nice baseball renaissance. You had two New York, although the Yankees had like five guys go down with injuries today. So there's that. Rodon and Bader on the IL to start the year. I know most of your national audience is captivated by that, but that is true.
Well, Shill's team has the Red Sox guy that we stashed for 4 years who was in the Navy, and then they somehow left him unprotected, and the Philly took him as a Rule 5 guy, and he throws 99. So I have a whole new reason to hate Philly sports this year. This Noah Song.
Schwarber,
just randomly
too?
On
yeah,
your team.
You really set him up.
Oh, the Schwarber thing. That was easy.
How'd you let Schwarber go? What a disgrace.
Jesus. So, Shill, you're updating the 100 free agents on theringer.com. You're also on the Ringer NFL show. You can hear JJ on the greatest podcast of all time, East Coast Bias, on the Ringer Gambling Show, as well as on the New York podcast. Thanks for coming on, guys.
You got it, buddy.
Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer partner of the NBA. It's just what you need to sit back and enjoy the game. And they're also getting fans closer to the game than ever. You can win exclusive NBA prizes like courtside seats, signed memorabilia, and more. I love Michelob because of how light it is. It's only 95 calories with 2.6 carbs. You know what the perfect time for Michelob Ultra is? A little doubleheader, a little NBA doubleheader. Right? First half of the first game. I don't know. West Coast time, that's usually about 5 o'clock, 5:30. Perfect time for a beer. You can do it. Grab a pack to enjoy today. Learn more and enter for your chance to win at MichelobUltra.com/courtside. LDA 21 and up. This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Nissan SUV. It's good to stay up to date. I mean, we've seen this in basketball, we've seen it in football, we've seen it in baseball. Once the stats started taking off in the 2000s, everybody had to figure that out. Then I remember in basketball, first it was three-pointers. Then it was defensive stats. You just got to keep moving. You got to keep evolving. You got to keep going. Now it's pace and threes. What's it going to be next, big guys? That's why the 2024 Nissan Rogue has Google built right into its 12.3-inch touchscreen infotainment system. With Google Maps, Assistant, and more, you can stay up to date on everything that's ahead without even needing to connect your phone. Find your next adventure with the Nissan SUV. Learn more about the Rogue, Pathfinder, and Armada SUVs at NissanUSA.com. All right, Sean Fantasy is here. We're taping this on a Wednesday. The last few years, you've come on and we've done your Oscar picks. You also do this on the Big Picture podcast. So sorry to the Big Picture audience. There's some spoiler alerts for that episode.
Listen to both. Why not?
Yeah, listen to both. So FanDuel has Oscars odds, which I think is super.
Thank goodness.
Oscar odds or Oscars odds?
I say Oscar odds.
It's Oscar odds, but like grammatically, it probably should be Oscars odds.
These are the odds for the Academy Awards.
Biggest surprise from November to now for you, just in what's become the favorite and what's gotten momentum. Is it only one answer?
How the hell did Everything Ever All at Once become the odds on favorite to win everything? I mean, it is like one of the most dominant juggernauts we've had in the last 20 years at the Oscars. It's remarkable that this has happened.
can we even know what a juggernaut is anymore when they added so many people to the academy and it seems like there's more randomness and weirdness than ever before?
Yes and no. I think because the movie has dominated so many of the precursors, the
yeah.
PGAs, the DGAs, the SAG Awards, the WGAs, it's winning all of the guilds, and it was already a hugely critically acclaimed movie, and it was a movie that did really well at the box office. So it's kind of a perfect storm, I would say, for what the Academy is looking for. You know,
do people over 45 like this movie?
I don't think so. Not to a person. I think there is certainly more confusion among older members of the Academy as to how this became the odds-on favorite.
Yeah.
And if you want to make the case that this movie is vulnerable yeah. on Sunday night, you would say, well, there's a strong contingent still, despite how many new people they've added, of older voters who watch this movie that is very informed by YouTube and the internet and meme culture and genre movies and films not made in the United States, and looks at this story and is like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, what's happening? You mean like how I watched it? I'm old, but like my daughter absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I'm not a multiverse guy. This movie was, I respected it. It was really well done. It's very well acted. After I finished, I was like, not thinking to myself, this is the one. This is the one that's going to be like Silence of the Lambs for
I know, it feels
just go on
way.
A run.
You know what's crazy about it is the movie was officially released in theaters on the Friday before the Academy Awards last year. So that, it was a late wow. March release.
Wasn't that Silence of the Lambs too, where they released it super early? I think it
you're
was.
Right. Yeah, I think it was earlier in the year, but that's very
unusual.
Uncommon.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Coda, you know, was a Sundance movie that premiered over the summer last year too. So all this conventional thinking we have about like, put your movie out in November or December and then do the hard awards push, like all that stuff is falling away now. We don't even think about the awards like that anymore. Like actually the movie grabbing the consciousness and holding a place there among voters is maybe a benefit for a movie like this. Or a lot of people who love it have loved it hard publicly for a yeah. long time.
It does feel like it has a chance to last more than just this year. Because it seems like the people that love it, like really, really, truly love it. And we'll rewatch it and it'll have like a run on cable and the whole, and streaming and wherever else. And it'll just kind of keep going. I don't feel like this is like a Green Book situation.
No,
like, oh,
no.
We got to, or what was that Frances McDormand movie? The Three Billboards?
Nomadland.
No, the Three Billboards.
Oh, yeah. That didn't win, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. You know, like these yeah. movies where you're like, will we be talking about this movie 2 years from now?
It's a really interesting question for this one in particular, because for me, there's a movie that is superior to it that I'm rooting for, which is Tar. Like that yeah. is the movie that I think is the best of the nominated films.
As you know, I agree.
You love Tar as well. I also love Top Gun Maverick. I enjoyed Top Gun Maverick.
As you know, I agree.
More than I enjoyed Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I liked Everything Everywhere, and I talked about it a lot on the show. And I think even more so than the fact that it's a story about Asian and Asian American identity, the fact that it's, you know, this multiversal thing that you're talking about, the fact that it's like a much younger kind of brand of storytelling, the Academy very rarely acknowledges science fiction.
Yeah.
Like there's just a small history of pure sci-fi getting recognized. And this is a big sci-fi movie and a kung fu movie, martial arts, and a lot of things that you don't usually see recognized. So in that respect, I think it will be seen as kind of like a watershed moment. Now, whether or not like it's the movie that ages the best, I think is debatable. Like I think Tar is a movie that's going to last a really long time and that people will return to 10, 20, 30 years from now.
I didn't think Tar would win best movie, but I thought Cate Blanchett was as big of a lock as we've ever had for an acting category, because she was just so incredible in that movie. And she's the best actress of her generation. I think it's fair to say she took the torch from Streep.
Yeah. There's some consensus on that
there. Yeah, yeah. I think you think like Oscar wins, nominations, body of work. She's just, if you're going to put a driver in the car, she's probably the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she's not the favorite now. And she hasn't really campaigned for it that much. She did a couple talk shows, but it's not like she's been out there. And it seems like she's giving off that air of, I've already won that. I don't want to look desperate. At the same time, that was one of the best actress performances I can remember in the last 30 years, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's an overstatement.
It feels so Oscars, though, that when we look back on her career when it's over, if she has two wins and they're for...
And one of them's for as Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator.
It's a Katharine Hepburn imitation.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a Woody Allen movie, Blue Jasmine, who, like, you know, people don't even rewatch Woody Allen movies anymore.
Right.
And then it won't be a win
Why
for
is
this.
That, Sean?
Well, Bill.
Record screech.
So that's just going to seem strange when we say, like, for 20 years, this was the person who we thought of as the best working actress in Hollywood and international movies. And she's not going to have a win for a movie like this. But she kind of threw it in Michelle Yeoh's direction at times. You know, she really went out of her way at film festivals in the fall to be like, Michelle Yeoh is one of international cinema's great treasures. She's been amazing for 30 years making movies. And she has. And so there is a little bit of an it's time thing, in addition to the fact that I think she's quite good and Everything Everywhere All at Once. And she's another example of a person who is a really physical performer. I mean, she's like a martial artist in a lot of her best movies.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that the Academy usually doesn't recognize as kind of a
see, aspect I like
of
that
the greatness.
Part.
It's cool. Yeah. It's really cool that she would win for something that reflects that. So it is surprising that over time, Blanchett has basically, you know, as she has relinquished it and Michelle Yeoh has grabbed it.
Well, and then in Tar, she's actually conducting and it seems like an elite, high-level conductor, which I think in the showdown against Michelle Yeoh, that's going to, the kung fu versus the conducting. I'm calling that a draw.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Cate Blanchett is like well-known for going way deep inside the characters, you know, and building like a whole world for them.
Our guy DDL.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Cruz when he wants to learn how to play billiards.
Yeah, and he's got to throw the rule book out.
Throw some drinks or whatever. I'm shocked that she's not going to win. I really think it's amazing.
It
but
seem
you made
it.
The key point. And we do this a lot when we're doing the rewatchables of like, that should have won. Oh my God, can you believe it? Sometimes you need, we always talked about, do we do this for Hottest Take? We did it somewhere, whether there should be a 5-year grace period before we decide the Oscar. I always thought it was really interesting. I know they'll never do that. But we argue about some of this stuff the same way, like we're in this NBA MVP horrible debate now that's turned toxic. There's 20 games left. And
just so I'm clear, you're voting Jokic because he's white? Yeah. Is that okay?
I mean, we all the white guys got together. We argue about that and it gets super personal. That doesn't really happen with the Oscars, but a lot of times we do get this wrong. Like we had a huge Cruz Hanks fight on the Catch Me If You Can rewatchables. And I was saying how Hanks has the 2 Oscars and he really should have 3.
Mm-hmm.
And you correctly pointed out, well, Cruz should have at least won for Magnolia.
Yep.
And it was like, ah, shit, that's probably true. Jerry Maguire would have been surprising, I think, if he won, because Cruz still had the baggage of just Cruz being Cruz, you know, for 15
more
years.
More movie star than great actor.
Yeah. And I don't think he'd had the acclaim or respect yet. Mm-hmm. But now, in retrospect, he probably should have beaten Jeffrey Rush and Shine.
I mean, he's going to die without an acting Oscar. Like, that's almost certainly going to happen. And that's
because
crazy.
He won't take a chance late in his career. He's not going to do his Verdict.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky with these things, right? Because it's never about the actual performance. It's about what was your campaign like. It's about what does it mean to the story of the Academy Awards. Like, with Michelle Yeoh, this is an Asian actress. Like, never been recognized in this category and in this way.
Yeah.
So that, for the Academy, it makes it a huge historical moment. And so that's working in its favor, in addition to the fact that it's a, you know, movie that people love with a great performance. Like, there's all of these other mitigating factors. You know, you said it doesn't really seem that nasty right now, but I know you're reading Oscar Wars, the Michael Shulman book. And like, you know, that book is all about how nasty it's been for the last 7
years.
Did
you finish it yet?
No, I haven't finished it. I started reading it after you told me about it. But like, since the 1930s, it's been sharp elbowed trying to win Oscars. You know, there's been a lot of fighting.
Harvey took it to 17 other levels. And that's when it went to really vicious, kind of mean-spirited, underhanded campaigns.
Awful swift boating style stuff against people who, you know, like dishonest disinformation about movies that, you know, otherwise did not imagine that they would be examined or projected. And a lot of that stuff is like a precursor for where our culture went. You know, like the idea
of fake news
and the way that we kind of lie or hold back information to make someone seem worse than they actually are. It's not to say that there isn't aggressive campaigning now. There is, but I am relieved to not be doing
now that's
a pod
moved
about
to the NBA.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah, the NBA has moved to the aggressive campaigning. I think one of the things that's helped everywhere is it's been the favorite for a while now, right? Oscar's history is you're the favorite. Okay, I'm gonna get my chisel out and start picking you apart.
Yeah.
People don't want to do that with this movie for a variety of reasons, many of which are very obvious. And we also don't have Harvey Weinstein and people like that. I don't know who this generation's Harvey is, but I just think the mentality of doing that stuff is different. If you're going to do that to a movie, I don't think it's this one. We've seen it in the past couple of years a couple times. But there has been, usually with the Oscars, you want to be like the one that's peaking late. You don't want to be the one that from December on, everyone's like, that's the one that's going to win. Usually people pick it apart.
But that's what's so crazy about this movie and this run is really no, there's only one movie that maybe sort of is mounting a challenge to it. All Quiet on the Western Front, which.
So that's my sleeper. If people think if everything doesn't win, it'll be Top Gun. And Top Gun's like 29-1 on FanDuel. All Quiet's at 14-1 on FanDuel, and it's been between like 8-1 and 14-1. But I just imagine the catastrophe that's going to be if that wins. You were making the case like it's a remake. It's an older person kind of skewing the kind of movie the Oscars used to get behind. And then if everything didn't won all these other things, but didn't win Best Movie, then All Quiet was the one that won. That would be weird.
It would be strange for so many reasons. Those among them. I mean, this is the original adaptation of the novel won Best Picture in 1930.
Yeah.
So like this is, or maybe it might have even been earlier. It might have been 27. Like this is something we've already done this, right? We did this story. Now the new film is different and the adaptation is different and it's made by German filmmakers and it's a German novel and it mostly had been American productions of that story. So that's part of the reason why. And that might be why it has this kind of, I don't know, dark horse quality to it, which is that the Academy is so international now.
Yeah.
This is the movie that won at the BAFTAs. This is the only time that Everything Everywhere didn't really win the big prize at all these important precursors. And, to me, it feels like a very, very, very slim possibility that it wins. But if it does win, it's going to be kind of an annoying, unfortunate next 48 hours of discussion about like where Hollywood is and what it wants to reward and whether or not it can get away from its own past.
It'll be like what happens with the NBA MVP.
Yeah.
Very similar. Top Gun.
That's why I'm voting for Jalen Brunson, by the way.
Top Gun. It is like an NBA MVP kind of narrative if Top Gun won, because there's been MVPs where it's just, I voted for Shaq in 2005. I didn't have a vote yet, but in my column over the first Steve Nash season.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was basically there's no better candidate, but really it's just Shaq's year.
Mm-hmm.
Shaq went from the Lakers to Miami and they went up 20 wins and the Lakers went down 20 wins. And it reminded us that this is one of the great basketball players and it's his time for one more. And that was the narrative. And that's really the Top Gun narrative where I don't think anybody thinks it's actually the best movie of the year, but in a lot of ways it was the best, it brought the most people together, saved the movie business, as Spielberg said, whether that's true or not. It had Cruise. Brought back this whole era of the movies we grew up with. It played the nostalgia card as well as I think any movie has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And it had two of my favorite scenes of the year of all the movies I saw, the Kilmer scene and then the scene when my guy Miles is playing Great Balls of Fire and Cruise kind of sinks, like some of the best acting of his career. It's just great. It's incredibly rewatchable. And if it won, I wouldn't think it's ridiculous, but I don't think it will.
I thought that it had a really strong chance like 3 months ago, before we started seeing all the serious precursors and guilds, because it does give you something that a lot of recent Best Picture winners give you, which is it makes you feel good at the end of it. At the end of it, you're like, God, I love movies. Isn't it so great to go into a movie theater and just have an utterly emotionally satisfying
And those
experience?
Kind of movies have won, like Titanic.
Yes.
I don't know if Titanic was the best movie of 97, but it was the biggest and...
It was the most
greatest
amazing achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah. And oftentimes that is what the Academy Awards is recognizing. Ben-Hur winning. It's an amazing achievement of a movie. I think, there's just a huge complexity with Tom Cruise. I think there's also a sense that a franchise sequel/reboot is not really worthy of a prize like that. I do think that's the next domino to fall, like after a kind of multiversal, multiple identity kind of film wins. We're gonna get to a time where a franchise movie, it's not probably not gonna be Dune Part Two, and obviously The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King did
that kind
already.
Of Godfather too.
Not kind of Godfather too, but like a superhero movie is probably gonna win something in the next 20 years. Like it's
not on my watch,
but it's like you have to think about as people who are 14 right now who are gonna be in the Academy when they're 34, 20 years from now, will have grown up thinking that superhero films and franchise films are movies. they have dominated what a movie is for the last 10, 15 years.
I say with my kids.
So this stuff always has this kind of evolutionary track to it. Top Gun is nostalgia. Top Gun is something from the past that makes us feel good about the way things used to be and who Tom Cruise used to be.
And it's exceptionally well-crafted.
Totally. It's brilliant.
The story moves, and the degree of difficulty, I think, was higher than it got credit for, but that wasn't going to win. Banshees, I just think, was too slow, ultimately. There's a pocket of people that loved it.
In a different, weaker year, it would have competed hard. It was considered a strong contender, again, like in the fall. And Martin McDonagh, you mentioned Three Billboards. Martin McDonagh has competed before.
Yeah.
He's really respected by the Academy. It's a little quiet as these movies go.
You know what? It's a movie that got hurt in the screener world.
Yeah.
It's a pretty easy, I'll look at my phone. I just got a text. But in a theater, I'm trapped now with these guys and I'm more immersed.
Yeah. I saw it on a big screen on a studio lot and I was like, that was really fucking good.
Well, that leads me to Best Actor, where Frazier's is the favorite on FanDuel, at least today, -160. And then Austin Butler as Elvis is basically even money. And then Colin Farrell's dropped to 11-1. And I think Colin Farrell's going to win. And that's the first odds that I've seen where I'm thinking to myself, because I haven't done anything with the Oscars yet. But that was one where I was like, I actually thought he was the best actor in that category. Thought his performance, I've always liked Colin Farrell. Obviously, I watch Miami Vice, the movie, once every 2 weeks. Still feel like he was underrated there.
You love mojitos. You're a fiend for mojitos.
I love mojitos. I just, the way he runs a speedboat, just can't sleep on it. But it's a redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good performance that I honestly didn't know he had in him.
Yeah.
I wasn't sitting around going, wow, I wonder if Colin Farrell is going to win Best Actor. Were you? Did you think he had it in him?
Well, he made a big choice about 10 years ago where he stopped worrying as much about being a big leading man in mainstream movies. And he just started working with Yorgos Lanthimos and Martin McDonagh and people like that and focusing more on auteur filmmakers and picking odd projects and pushing himself in movies. And so he's become like legitimately a kind of top 10 actor in Hollywood right now. Just
it's so funny because there's this other world where he's just fighting with Gerard Butler to see who's the lead of Plane.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I thought it was going for him.
He would dip back in. Like he did the Total Recall remake, you know, like 8 or 9 years ago. And you'd be like, oh, so you're not totally ready to give up on this yet.
Yeah.
But then he would go make a movie with Sofia Coppola. You know, like he really was trying to, you know, go both ways. I thought he was the best as well. He was my favorite out of this category.
Oh, I didn't realize that was your pick.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to win.
Yeah.
I do think Brendan Fraser is going to win. He just won the SAG award. There is my co-host on The Big Picture, Amanda Dobbins, is a hardcore Austin Butler fan, horned up for Austin Butler, as are many of the ladies in the Academy, you know,
he's
working very hard on this campaign. He's doing every show. He's kissing every baby. He's a clearly very charming and talented guy.
He even talks like Elvis in real life now, which I've seen some of those clips. It's hilarious.
He has fully slipped into the Elvis voice.
He's really good in that movie. It's just not a good movie.
I do not like the movie at all.
The movies.
I'm not a Baz Luhrmann fan. I thought it was like really, really
I really
overdone.
Respect him. I respect him though. I like that he exists. I just don't like any of his movies.
It's a tall task. I mean, I'm also allergic to the transforms into a musician and winning an Academy Award thing. Like I'm so sick of it.
Yeah.
7 out of the last 10 Best Actor winners were based on real people. I'm so bored by that. I don't think it's impressive. We've talked before, like there should be an entirely separate category that's just performance based on a real person versus something like what
that was one of the fake categories we want to give up.
Like what Colin Farrell does or what Brendan Fraser does, regardless of how you feel about those films, those are inventions. Like those are pure
Gerard Butler and Plane.
Same thing. We've never seen that guy before.
Not eligible to next year.
Yeah. What's his name? What's the captain's name? He has an incredible name in that movie.
It's like Jimmy Hammer or something like that. I'm so glad he's doing his thing.
He's crushing it. Gerard
Butler. I have season tickets for him now.
He has another one coming this summer called Kandahar, where he goes to Afghanistan.
Neeson was like, I can't really walk anymore. Here's the torch.
He did pass it off.
Butler's like, I've got this. Mark Wahlberg's kind of circling now for it, though. I feel like he's got his fight. He just sold his house. The Father Stew thing I don't think was great for him. I feel like a Shooter 2 might be looming now for him.
I just feel like Mark Wahlberg like has too much money. And so when he makes one of those movies, I'm like, is this for your eighth house? Like with Gerard Butler, I'm like, are you living paycheck to paycheck? Like,
oh, I wanted to introduce a new segment on The Big Picture called Career Advice, where I just came in for 90 seconds at the end. So we'll test it out now. And then you tell me if you're
Who are you going to do it for your guy?
I'm going to do it for my guy, Bernthal.
Okay.
Because I didn't really love the American Gigolo choice. Mm-hmm. And in general, I'm just a little worried about some of the choices. As you know, he's my guy.
He's returning to portray the Punisher now, which he did 5 or 6 years ago.
So
no, we don't love to see that.
No. Taking Bernthal to maybe get a burger.
Mm-hmm.
Go to father's office. Yeah, great. Father's office will get a burger. Yeah. Be like,
get an IPA.
Johnny, let's talk for 1 minute here. Just make a movie where you rob a bank and you have an ex-wife and you live in a shitty apartment they haven't really decorated.
Uh-huh.
And you have to put a crew together, including two guys that you were in jail with that you haven't seen in 8 years. And it's one last score. Nobody's robbed this bank ever. It's never been robbed. It's the only bank in LA that's never been robbed before. And just put the team together and take the bank down and then try to get out of LA. And I know you're probably going to die at the end of the movie, but just fucking do it.
Here's the thing. The person that he reminds me of is one of our favorite people, the late, great James Caan. Very masculine, strong presence in movies, great face.
Might blow up at any time.
Could lose his temper any moment.
Yeah.
But it also like a vulnerability, right, that makes you get connected to his characters. If he's going to do a bank heist movie, I want it to be even more specific. I want the movie to be Safecracker. He's the world's greatest
Safecracker. So it's basically Thief, 2023 Thief.
Exactly.
Great.
It's right there.
All right. That's it. That was our career advice audition. all right. So best actress, pretty even. Right now, Michelle Yeoh is -140. Blanchett's +105. I find it impossible to believe Blanchett's not going to win.
It's not like she won't. Like she definitely could.
Is that one of the 10 best performances of the last 10 years?
It's up there.
Like
it's
one of the there. Five best?
It's aided by the fact, obviously she's at the center of the movie. She plays the title character, but it's aided by the fact that it's made by a world-class filmmaker like Todd Field. He's only made 3 movies, all 3 of those movies nominated Todd. For Oscars. You know,
and Big League Chew.
And he co-created Big League Chew. Yeah. He's a legend among legends. But she could win. It could happen.
Best supporting actor, that's done.
Kiwi Kwan from Everything Everywhere All at Once will win. He's won the only everything.
It's the only one that everybody's. Yeah.
And that's another good story. You know, a guy who was like basically out of the movie business since he went back to going when he was a child actor working with Spielberg and Indiana Jones movies and learned how to become like a. He worked in stunts and he worked in behind the camera and he went over to China and did work and came back. And, you know, he's like a effervescent dude and people have liked seeing him win.
Supporting actress.
This is a hard one. I don't really know.
This is a hornet's nest category.
Yep.
It's going to come early. It's usually the first category. And you could tell me anyone in the category could win. Right now, Queen Angela Bassett is +130. That movie's not very good. I think it's okay to say. It's okay to admit now. We're glad to have another Black Panther movie, but it wasn't very good.
You know, I think it was Matt Bellany who made this observation on The Town, but the Black Panther Wakanda Forever would have been the first performance Angela Bassett's to win for a Marvel movie, an Oscar. And that was touted quite a bit since she won the Golden Globe back in January. There was a lot of talk about how that was a big moment for winning for a Marvel movie. And then I think a lot of voters started to hear that out loud and they were like, I don't like that idea as much as I like Angela Bassett, because there's a lot of resentment about what's happened to Hollywood in the last 15, 20 years, especially inside the Academy. So she may not be as strong as it seemed like she was 6-8 weeks ago.
She's great in the movie and it's not a very good movie.
I agree.
We've had a lot of situations where somebody was great in a movie and usually the quality of the movie then ended up hurting their candidacy.
That's true, but sometimes people win for mediocre movies too. You know, you never really
know.
Give me
an example.
I mean, Cate Blanchett and the Aviator, you know, like I like that movie, but is that like the greatest Martin Scorsese movie?
It's fun when he lands on the golf course. Jamie Lee Curtis, girl for Since Forever. That's a little career achievement.
This is where my head's at. I feel like this is where it's going. Because she won at SAG. And when she won at SAG, she gave an amazing speech.
Daughter of two famous actors.
Yeah, Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh.
Grew up in the industry, saw some things.
She's been like...
Survivor.
And again, another person...
Michael Myers tried to kill her 100 times.
She represents a different part of Hollywood that is important. You know, she's been a genre star.
I like it too. +165,
years.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think that's a better value. And then best director, the Daniels are -1800, which basically means there's no chance they're not winning. And yet Spielberg at +850 with the let's give them one more. Now, Bellany and Lasker talked about this on the town today about there's plenty of time to give him one more because he's obviously going to keep making movies until he just drops
dead.
How
much more time? I mean, 75, 76?
Dude.
I know he's making movies, but
LeBron
next movie-
can play 25 years. Spielberg can make a movie when he's 90. I mean, fucking Mel Brooks did History of the World. He's like 120.
Part two. He's 95 years old.
So after that, Spielberg, what's he going to do? What's he going to be like, all right, I'm good. I'll see you guys later. Like, he's going to make movies until he's like senile.
I watched The Fablemans the second time. I've got an urge to watch it the third time. I've really started to come around on it as being a really great movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I need to watch it again?
I think it's really, really sophisticated and really odd and kind of like there's a perverse quality to the movie. It's not this kind of like sweet, you know, wide-eyed kids expectation that you have about Spielberg. Now, it is very like self-centered, obviously. It's very like, look what I achieved and accomplished with my career. But the filmmaking is A+. Just like I thought West Side Story, the filmmaking was A+.
Every movie he makes. Are surprised by that with Spielberg now?
It is, but there is a kind of technical wizardry that he shows off in these movies that I don't see in like the BFG or War Horse.
Think he's getting help? HGH?
I do, yes. I think he's on the LeBron plan.
Kale Sonnen accusing Spielberg of help?
I think it's weird that the Daniels just like locked this down. As much of an achievement as their thing is, them winning Best Picture and Best Screenplay would make a lot of sense to me. But
I always thought the co-director thing was a huge negative.
It used to be. That's changed a lot.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot.
All right. So we think...
is there any chance Todd Field sneaks in there?
No.
Yeah. It's too bad.
You know what the problem for that movie is from a voting standpoint and from a screener standpoint? It gets better as it goes along.
Mm-hmm.
And the first like 20, 25 minutes are just slow and they're intentionally slow. It's like a specific choice by him.
It's like lulling you to sleep.
He starts that long interview. It's almost like you're watching a podcast. It's like, what is this? And then it goes. And then it's not until she starts going after the student during the class.
Yeah.
That's when it's like, oh, we're doing this.
Yeah.
And then we're off. And then I think the last hour of that movie is unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree.
Like from the moment it starts unraveling for her and watching what she does as an actor, I think you can make a case she's the best actor right now.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
If our guy DDL has really hung it up, that coward who only goes backwards in time and won't play a character in modern era.
I just for the record, I did not call Daniel Day-Lewis a coward. That was Bill
kidding,
Simmons.
Audience. I just like, hey, Daniel Day-Lewis, just play a cop. Play a divorced dad. Why do you always have to go
he
back to the
1800s? Right? Wasn't Ballad of Jack and Rose, was that a movie that he did that was like a contemporary movie? But he was kind of a weird guy in that movie. But that was the only time I can remember being like, this is modern times when this is set. No?
I don't even remember that movie.
Yeah,
when
it was a very
that?
Small movie. I think it was written by his wife, Rebecca Miller, I want to say.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Just how about playing like, I don't know, he could have played Phil Knight in Air.
I'd like to see him audition against Bernthal for Safecracker. I feel like they can both go.
Bernthal and DDO, but rob a bank. Yeah, so who has the belt right now? Who's our greatest living actor?
Well, we were just talking about this. I mean, there's an interesting thing happening with Jonathan Majors right now. So you haven't seen Creed 3 yet. I can't wait to talk to you after you've seen it. He was in the most recent Marvel movie, which everybody shit on and did not great business. But he plays the big villain, Kang.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be very famous for a long time because he's the big villain in this new part of the story. He just played the heavy in Creed 3.
Everyone said he's unbelievable.
I thought he was remarkable. I thought he was so believable as a boxer. I thought he was a perfect counterpoint to Michael B. Jordan's acting style. And then there's a movie that played at Sundance called Magazine Dreams that is a very, very flawed movie, but that he is the star of. And he plays an aspiring bodybuilder. And it's like Taxi Driver with bodybuilding.
Wow.
And he is out of this world. And
so we might have we'd be the hottest take about why don't we have American actors anymore? We might have finally landed the plane on
one. He might be the guy that you were looking for.
Early 30s?
Yeah, he's early 30s. And I'll be surprised if he's not nominated for an Oscar this time next year for Magazine Dreams.
Interesting. All right, Majors. We got one.
Yeah, we got one.
It's like how you said with... who is the
with
we
Giselle.
Got?
Yeah, that was yeah, the we
Giselle
got one.
When
yeah,
we did
like,
the
yes.
Whiplash podcast. Yeah. We got one. Okay, so we think the Oscars are going to be compelling. Cruise will be in the front row. Cruise will present one of the five majors.
Do you think he will be in the front row? That was something that we were wondering about this week, because if he is in the front row, that means the camera's going to be on him like the whole time.
It's Kimmel hosting.
I know.
But that. I mean, like, I think Kimmel would make the request. And I think Cruz is in the front row and he'll play off Cruz and Cruz will do the overlapping thing and it'll be a thing.
It'll be it's nice that just for one season, Cruise gets to be the mayor of Hollywood. You know, we've had a couple of good moments, him going to the Academy luncheon and Spielberg being like, you save movies.
Yeah.
You know, him getting nominated for Best Picture. I mean, he produced Top Gun Maverick. All that stuff is fun. I hope he doesn't just like recede back into the darkness and only make Mission Impossible movies. I hope he continues to be out happened. Front.
No.
You don't think so?
I think he is his goal, as we've talked about on many rewatchable spots, is his goal is to die doing a stunt on Mission Impossible or whatever movie.
So
he's just raising the bar. It's like watching the ECW wrestlers. He's like fucking New Jack.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, what if I jumped out of the lights?
Yeah.
Would I go through the ring if I land on the guy? Like, that's Cruise now.
So
he's run out of ways to even feel emotion.
Cruise being there is really good for the show, really good for the telecast because people love that movie.
Well, you think he's the greatest actor we've had. You thought he was the GOAT over Tom Hanks.
It's
an actual take you out on a podcast.
I didn't say he's the greatest actor.
I said you had him over Hanks.
I think what I was trying to say was that he was the greatest figure in movies, which I think is different, but we can debate that another time.
Well, it's like actor versus movie star, I guess, are two different things.
And I think that they both have a piece of that puzzle.
Redford was a movie star, but I wouldn't say he was an incredible actor.
I made this comparison with MBJ and Majors. I was like, Majors is an amazing actor and MBJ is an amazing movie star. And MBJ is a really good actor and Majors is a really good movie star. So they work well together. The Cruise thing, I think there are some, when he decides he's locked in, like in Magnolia, or Eyes Wide Shut, or a movie like that. He's really good.
25 years ago. He doesn't want to act like that anymore. Tom Cruise.
What about when he's watching his dead friend's son play Great Balls of Fire and Pete Maverick Mitchell's getting the waterworks
going?
Fucking
amazing moment. Yeah, but he's still Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Like Hanks is like, we talked about this on the rewatchables. Hanks like, I'm going to try a crazy accent for this. Like Hanks is at least like taking swings, which I respect. But a lot of the swings have not worked, which to your case, like his last 20 years, it's been some whiffs.
You know who took a lot of swings? Yeah. Adam Dunn. He struck out a lot too, you know?
Fair.
Rob Deere.
Whatever happened to that
guy? He took a lot of swings. I have to ask you though, because I used to be so obsessed with will people watch the Oscars? And I kind of gave up on that last year. Do you think people are curious about this right now? Like, especially since Everything Everywhere All at Once is such a juggernaut, like, is it going to be a good year for the show? I know Jimmy's hosting and everything, but I'm genuinely curious about whether it's going
to
do well.
I think a year after the Will Smith slap, I think is a huge draw for this to see what, at least what Jimmy does in the first 15 minutes. And I haven't asked him, but there's no way it's not going to come up, you know? And then you have some pretty big stars in the audience and some, at least movies that people saw this year.
For sure.
And Top Gun is the most popular non-comic book movie in a while.
Except for one other movie, Avatar: The Way of Water.
Right.
Which is also nominated.
Right. And then I think a lot of people saw I was surprised by how many people in my life saw Triangle of Sadness and really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has a fan base. Told me it has no chance of winning because it's too sad and too unhappy, but...
It's not that it has no chance whatsoever. It just...
People love that movie.
It's a really like miserable, doom laden ending about how no matter who gets money and power, they will be corrupted. Like that's a kind of the opposite of what people in Hollywood want to hear.
Mm. You
know? So I'm not surprised it's nominated though. It won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, and that director is very celebrated, Ruben Östlund. But to me, if it's not Everything Everywhere All at Once, no matter what it is, if it's not that movie, it's going to be shocking at the end of the show.
Not a great movie year, but a super weird and memorable movie year.
High including ceiling, some, low floor.
And some big swings and misses from some really famous directors, including your guy, although you're in the Babylon Hive.
Yeah, he killed it. I went to a screening on Saturday night of the movie at the Arrow in Santa Monica. Sold out.
Babylon Hive?
People were chanting after the movie.
You saw Babylon again?
Yeah, I did. It was awesome.
How many times have you seen it?
3 times.
That's fucking insane.
It is so good.
I couldn't get through one time.
I honestly had the time of my life. I thought it was so fun.
Your case that it's about how Hollywood has always been this awful is the only compelling case I've heard for that movie.
It would have made it so fun to be nominated with that being the message. But unfortunately, Hollywood was like, we're too smart for that. We're not nominating you for this.
It almost seems like he made that movie so that eventually it could play at the New Beverly Cinema with the 58 people who fucking loved it.
I talked to him on the podcast and I kind of kept trying to push him that way. I was like, were you trying to make just like a fuck you cult movie? Like, you can tell me it's okay. Like, if you just wanted to make a movie for like the real weirdos, and he wouldn't take the bait, but I think in his heart of hearts, that's what he was doing.
His next one will be a very successful, relatively normal movie.
I agree. Something more mainstream.
Because one too many, you become weird guy. And I just,
love those guys.
I know you do, but every once in a while, weird guy, it's like, you know, one for him, one for us. It can be like three for them, one for us. But
yeah, how do you be Scorsese, I think, is the thing. How do you continue to make things that seem really weird and transgressive, but for whatever reason, you build a strong following.
Yeah.
And people at a certain point just have to call you a genius. Like, that's what these guys have to figure out how to do now as they go to the next phase.
Yeah. Then Scorsese, like, his most fun phase was when he was like, fuck it, and made like The Departed.
Yeah.
And that whole, ripped off that whole run.
We might be talking
wasn't
about
his best movie phase, but
we could be talking about him this time next year because his big movie is probably premiering this summer. Mm. Killers of the Flower Moon.
Can't wait. All right. Listen to Sean in The Big Picture for all the deep dive stuff. Good to have you as always.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. That's it for the podcast. Thanks to John Jastrzemski, Sheil Kapadia, and Sean Fennessy. Thanks to Kyle Crane for producing as always. Thanks to Steve Cerruti. And I will see you on this podcast with Priscilla on Sunday night.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
This episode of the Bill Simmons Podcast is brought to you by Honey Stinger. This is a show about sports and culture opinions, but right now I want to talk sports facts, the data, the stats. Honey Stinger, sports nutrition, trusted by more than 1,500 pro and college teams. That's right, 1,500. That's all 32 pro football teams. That's 39 pro basketball teams, 29 pro baseball teams, and more that prepare, perform, and recover with the delicious taste of Honey Stinger's energy waffles, chews, gels, and bars. Honey Stinger is the one team's trust. Use code Simmons for 20% off your first order at honeystinger.com. That is SIMMONS for 20% off your first order at honeystinger.com.